Okay, welcome back to the Million Podcast. And today I have Mathias Masur and Andreas Ögren on the show. And Andreas has actually been here before. Andreas was one of the biggest talents in ice hockey many years ago, but he injured his back. And he went to doctors, he went to experts, and he asked for advice. What should I do with my back? And they told him, well, you're quite weak in your back. And Andreas said, well, I'm many things, but I ain't weak. So there Andreas' journey started to actually get the knowledge of how to solve this back problem. And this was decades ago. And since then, he has so much knowledge. He solved his own back pain. And Henrik Zetterberg, one of Sweden's biggest hockey players through all time, he actually had the same back problem. And Andreas helped him fix that. Andreas has coached over 60 professional hockey players in the States and is considered by many in Sweden as one of the best in his field. So during our last conversation, when I had Andreas in my podcast, that conversation was about how to be world class. And it was a very, very appreciated episode. So I'm glad to have you back on the show, Andreas.
And as always, amazing presentation. So thank you very much for that. Happy to be back.
Thank you. And we also have Mathias Masur. And Mathias is by many considered one of the best in the world in this industry. And I mean, for me to have Mathias on my show, I actually been nervous today, and I feel truly honored having Mathias in my podcast. He has generated over $200 million. That's numbers like, that is some huge amount of money. He's been featured in Forbes. He has 20 years of experience selling digital products. And I'm so excited to have the two of them in this interview. And we're actually going to talk about high performance secrets, how to be world class in life and in business. Welcome to the show, Mathias. I hope you felt fine with that introduction.
Thank you. That's a great intro. Very happy to be here. Thank you. And thank you, Andreas, for the connection. I'm looking forward to talking about everything.
Where are you right now, Mathias?
I'm in Dubai, sunny Dubai right now. It is 35 Dubai. Degrees outside.
Oh, that's hot.
It is hot. It's getting hot. So very different to Europe, where I'm originally from, Switzerland. It's about 8 degrees today. So it's a very different experience.
And Andreas, you landed in Sweden today, just a couple of hours ago, right?
Yeah, I just came back from the States. I landed at 10 this morning and I went home and I had a little nap and I woke up and I'm like, I'm probably going to stay here in bed for the rest of my life. But now I feel a lot better. So I'm really excited for this. So I love both of you and I know both of you are great communicators and I know this is going to be a great episode.
But before we jump into our subject, I'm very curious about how the two of you met. I know I heard one story, Andreas, from you, but I can't really retell it. I'm asking you, Mathias, what's the story behind you and Andreas?
This goes back to 2018, I believe. So years ago, actually. So I'm a big hockey fan and I've been following hockey. I used to play hockey when I was a child. So I come from a very sporty family, got into tennis, hockey, and judo when I was growing up. So sports was something you do every single day. And hockey was always my favorite sport, even though I chose to go into tennis and we can go into that later. But hockey was always dear to my heart. And, you know, the came a time in life where you have to choose, because you can go full time and pro and train for two different professional sports at the same time, especially two that are very different. And so I chose tennis, but hockey was always my first love. You know, so I've been following hockey. I have old jerseys from the 80s and the 90s in my, you know, in my cupboard. I have old, you know, memorabilia that I had when I was like 5 years old. So collection cards with the old cards. You know, I still have the hockey news editions of the early 90s. So I always loved hockey. I used to count and add up the points from all the players in the early 90s in the NHL, and knew all the lines from all the teams. And that's just, you know, I love the game. But tennis was really, that took a lot of my time after that. But hockey being, you know, a big passion, I always followed Swiss hockey, of course, but also the NHL, because the NHL is where all the best players in the world go play. And, you know, I kept seeing that Andreas's name was being mentioned as as someone behind the scenes. And one of the things, one of my thinking patterns over the years has always been about looking at people who are behind the scenes, because those are the ones that make the ones that are on the stage, on the scenes, be able to perform. And I was lucky to train with some of the best trainers and conditioning coaches and tennis coaches literally in the world. So, you know, I know how to tell the difference between someone who is world class and, you know, many other coaches. And, you know, I kept seeing Andreas's name being tagged on different Instagram accounts years ago and seeing articles about him helping athletes. And before that, I actually had a pretty severe hip injury through, it's something that a lot of tennis players have because there's so much stress placed on lower body and hip joints. And just the, anything played at a high level in sports is unhealthy. And I have a congenital situation or a congenital hip situation that makes it, that is such that my hips take a lot more stress and have suffered more through my tennis years. And a lot of pro tennis players go through major hip surgeries and have to retire very early. And so I was, about 10 years ago, I was looking for solutions because it got to a point where I was still in my 20s and looking at going to doctors and looking at solutions. You know, the solutions at the time were very much either you have to manage the pain or you have to go through surgery. And I had already retired from tennis, so there was no point in me doing surgery. It was a very radical solution I found. And luckily, I had a good doctor in Switzerland who said, hey, if you can manage it and go through, you know, a process of 6 to 12 months to kind of do things yourself, that would be good and help you avoid surgery. And so that kind of started the journey and opening the door through different ways of healing. And of course, I have a lot of friends who play professional sports, Olympic athletes that I grew up with too. And hockey, of course, the connection, and this is how it gets to Andreas. I noticed that several hockey players that, you know, were huge, huge names had, of course, major, major hip issues and had to retire very early and or play with excruciating pain. And I saw that Andreas actually helped a lot of those athletes not only manage pain, but actually compete. And that is the beginning of how I started following Andreas's Instagram account, was initially through just helping myself with, you know, some of the movements. And a few years later, I reached out to him because I know he was also working closely with several NHL teams. So his name was popping up on, you know, on forums and hip treatments. And, you know, I reached out and I said, you know, I knew that he was doing an event up in Finland, and I was living in London at the time. I flew to Finland to meet him. And luckily I had already seen really good results through the stuff and the exercises he had shared on his Instagram account. And him being a him being a real former professional athlete, which is also very different to a lot of coaches, which I respect, you know, but who have learned the skill of coaching, which is fine, but don't have a lived experience as a real professional athlete, which I have, which Andreas has. And so I always in my life through business and sports, I always want to meet the source. I want to meet the person who really has lived and can talk about things through practice and also then theory, because we need both. So I wanted to meet Andreas and went up to Finland to meet him, participated as a student, you know, in a full 2-day seminar slash practical summit slash retreat, and picked up more exercises. And my hips have been great since, you know, I've been doing that for years. And then that is really the inception of how Andreas and I met. And then in Finland, we, for some reason, started talking about the internet, and like, because it was a closed door event, there were only 12 to 15 people, it was very easy to actually build one-on-one connections. And, you know, I you know, shared my story going from, you know, pro tennis to then building businesses. And the connection was very much, you know, hey, you know, I know you do, you've built online businesses. I'm looking to add that to the services and what I offer. Is this something we can talk about? And I said, yes, of course. Let's, you know, let's go for dinner. And that's, you know, I flew to meet him and to really get a sense of how he is. And there's only so much you can feel through virtual connections. Sometimes you just have to meet. And I really like meeting people in person, because that's when the truth is revealed. And the connection is great. We've been friends for years. We talk about everything and anything. And since then, we talked about, of course, online businesses and what he does, and basically productizing what, you know, what we call now productizing expertise. And it's something that I've done for the last 15 years, which is taking, you know, real experts, you know, real experts who have a real story and real skills, and transforming their skills into training programs, whether it's physical, so in person or online. And that's really how Andreas and I met. And since then, you know, we've been working on a lot of different things. We have Andreas's book coming out soon about high performance on the let's call it the physical side. So really the training and conditioning side and the rehab side. And just, but beyond business, it's really been a great relationship. That's really, that clicked immediately. And that's been a very like one of the, you know, the closest friendships that I enjoy sharing a lot of things with Andreas. And, you know, we've spent a lot of time together, and that's basically the long story of how we met. So it goes actually way back. And I don't know if I ever told you this, but it goes way back, the Finland event, because I was in severe pain. And I know that you treat a lot of big athletes, and Andreas, you should be the one to mention the names. I know them, but, you know, it's your, it's your, those are your people. And, but for me, it's really changed my life on a physical level. And long story short too, every 2 days I go through my hip routine. And those are the same exercises that Andreas posted years ago on Instagram. Those are the ones that he showed in Finland. And so, you know, whether I want to or not, I'm every three times a week, I'm thinking of Andreas, because I have to go through this hip routine. So,
Andreas, how do you feel about all these compliments, Andreas? You must be very proud of yourself.
Yeah, I mean, thank you, Matthias. It's that's a beautiful, beautiful story. And yeah, you're right. And I clearly remember that Finland venue. And I mean, people that don't know me well think maybe I am a big time extrovert guy that loves to be on stage and love to talk on stage, love to sing and play guitar and stuff. But I'm actually an introvert. And after teaching one day, I rather go to the hotel and be by myself just to recover, because I've been around people for a full day and I'm always really focused and give my best. But when Matthias asked me, like he said, we really connected that day. And when he asked me, well, if where we talked about going to dinner and speak. And I had no clue that he was this business genius that he is and this mega successful guy. I had no, I thought it was a tennis coach with bad hips. So, but I really liked the guy. So it was like, not, I, my intention was not like he's this, you know, Richard Branson level guy and wanted to have dinner with me. It was just, we clicked as friends and that dinner was incredible. Then when he started more explaining what he really does. And I remember you asking him like, are you ready to take over the world? And I'm like, yep. So yep. It was just a great connection. And I agree with Matthias. It's a great, great friendship. And I'm going to share a little secret, if you don't mind, Matthias, but we texted a little bit about our kind of goals together for what we're doing right now. And what he said was, number one was our friendship and our trust together, and number two was the money part. So when he texted that to me, that his number one focus for us was our friendship and our trust, and that's why we're doing this. And of course he believes in my expertise, and the combination with his expertise is going to be hopefully extremely good, but that was secondary. So that's the way, that's the kind of person he is. He's not incredibly, just incredibly successful. He's absolutely one of the best people I ever met in my life, and a beautiful heart and beautiful man. So thank you.
And Andreas, people are still talking about you here. We had a big summer party here, Matthias, last summer. So I invited Andreas over and said, can you play guitar? And Andreas said, you want to play a little bit. So he bought the guitar and he came over and he started to sing, and people went bananas here, and people in the neighborhood, they still talk about this Andreas and this professional singer. And I said, no, he's a trainer. He do other, he's not a pro singer, but you probably could have been that too, Andreas.
Yeah, I mean, we're probably going to mix that in our lectures in the future. So hopefully more people can see me on stage singing too.
And I'm also proud of our friendship, Andreas. You went to my course 1 year ago, I think.
Yeah.
And I mean, look at you now. From 1 year ago, you said to me, I'm not sure if I want to be famous or if I want to do that. And today you're working with Matthias. You have this team with Max. And I mean, and you are expanding so quickly. So that's very inspiring for me to see and follow your journey, Andreas.
Well, thank you. I mean, you helped me a lot. And I think it was the same with us. Yeah, Jonathan, that we really connected off right away too, and are building a really close friendship as well. And for me, same as with Matthias, I think our friendship is number one. And then like we connected, like, so yes, you said, with Max and with Luvisa, who's a VA, like virtual assistant for both of us. And we kind of have using the same people around us because they world class too. And we are becoming a little family. And I love that. And because me and Matthias, who are very alike in many ways, because he had to stop playing tennis because of injuries. I stopped playing hockey because of injuries. We're a former pro athletes. I am a team sport athlete and he's an individual athlete. Mm. So I love this team thing. I miss that so much. And that's why when I said to you, and I thought, do I really want to go? Like, the world out there is so tough today with all like the people on the internet that not being very nice to other people. And do I really want to be that guy when I'm an introvert? I'd rather be by myself alone in my home doing nothing. So it's been a tough choice, but when I realized there are actually really, really good people out there too, so that I can work with it, you guys are becoming my family, and it feels great. And I think everything is just connecting into each other. First, I met you, Jonathan, and you introduced me to people. Then Matthias and I really decided to go for it. So everything in this last year has been insane. It's been absolutely incredible, and I'm enjoying every day of it. So thank you, Jonathan.
But Matthias, you have such an inspiring story. So you were actually ranked the number one tennis player in Switzerland when you were 16, right? 17?
Yep.
So
yep.
When did you decide in your life, like, I want to become one of the best tennis player in the world?
I've always wanted... So both, like I said, both my parents were, so I grew up in a very sporty family. So sports was part of the conversation and every day, you know. My parents used to play tennis. They used to go running, skiing in the winter, like many people in Switzerland. So there was always activity. From a very young age, I've always, for some reason, you know, those old notebooks that you would pass around in school when you're 5 years old, and you would write your favorite color and your favorite pet and what you want to do in the future. The only thing I remember writing is professional tennis player from the youngest age. So it was very clear. You know, some people say they want to be an astronaut or a doctor. For me, it was always professional tennis player. So for some reason, it was always because I grew up watching, you know, the legends like Agassi and Sampras and Becker. And I just, it was very clear in my mind. There was no doubt in my mind that that's what I wanted to do. But of course, there's a big difference between wanting that when you're 5 years old and actually going and playing and training and competing. So to answer your question, it would the big shift happened around 11, 12 years old when you know, I was training like many other young athletes, not even athletes, like children, really. And the Swiss Tennis Federation, like most national federations, invite, at least in Switzerland, they invite children of every age group once a year to kind of do an assessment and see who is, you know, who has potential, who can be recruited and helped more. And at the age of 12, I go through that, you know, that day or that weekend, and then a few weeks later, we get a letter from the Swiss Tennis Federation, and my dad, and I, this is something that I will never forget because I still remember where the car was parked. He came to pick me up after tennis training, and he gave me the letter, and it was the physical letter because this was in the you know, the 90s, of the Swiss Tennis Federation, and I read it, and it basically said that I was not selected for that year, but I could go back next year to showcase again. And I remember that it was like the world was stopping. It was the end of my world. It was the, you know, the worst thing that could ever happen to me. And I cried and cried. And from that moment, I really, something happened in my mind, in the sense that it was the first fork in the road in my life, which was I can either accept this and I can lower my goals, because the goal was to be my dream at the time. Because you don't even know what a goal is when you're a child. My dream was to be a professional tennis player. So either I just accept it and I believe what they say of like that I'm not good enough compared to other children my age, or I need to show them. And so showing them means I need to work more, because work has always been the solution. Hard work and working more than others, not only more in volume, but also strategically more, has always been my way of solving problems. And I said, okay, it's time to get to work because you're not good enough. And so 2 years later, I was ranked number one in the country at age 14. So of my age. And from the moment you're number one in the country, they send you on the national, sorry, the world, the European and World Junior Tour. So that's when I had my first taste of playing in the World Juniors. And that year I went to a tournament in France called Les Petits As. That is, if you watch the videos on YouTube, that is the world event for the best 14-year-olds in the world. So every number one and number two of the country gets sent, and that is the World Championships. And that year, Nadal won. And so, you know, it's that was my
Oh
first
my
time seeing all these players, who many of which have become professionals. And so between the ages of 14 and 17, I was number one in the country, which allowed me to be to represent Switzerland at, you know, all the World Junior Championships, and European team and single championships, and travel the world and really see and compete against and play directly against Nadal himself and Novak Djokovic himself, at 16, 17 years old. I was recruited by. And so the story, I was not recruited at age 12, but at age 16, I was recruited by the Swiss Tennis Federation, by Roger Federer's coach at the time. And his name, sadly, so he passed away. His name was Peter Carter. He was basically Roger Federer's coach who built his game. And there's a lot of articles you can find online about the tragic accident that happened. And that was a few months after he recruited me, because he was the head of the men's selection at the Swiss Tennis Federation. And that's when I joined. And a few months later, unfortunately, he passed. And that year was very difficult for me because, you know, a few months later, that's when I got my first big injury. And you know, that took me about 9 months to recover. And then I went back on the secondary tour, which is called the Challenger and the Future Tour. It's under the ATP level. And I also had the opportunity to train with great players. You know, I had trained for years with Roger Federer's coach, conditioning coach called Pierre Paganini, and his wife Isabel Paganini. And Pierre has been instrumental for Federer's career. And you know, when you it's funny, because when you're in this, you don't realize, when you look back now, I literally had the opportunity to play, competed with three Grand Slam holders in history. Federer was older than me. He was so nice. He was just such a positive person, even with the juniors. And I remember the very first time I met him when I was 14 years old. He was from 1980, so, or 80, 81. So he was probably 19, 20 years old. And he came to me at the Swiss Tennis Federation, because at 14 years old, you know, I was shy. It was the first, everything was new. And he came to me and said, "Hey, Matthias." And it's one of those things that when you meet someone at that level, that has then had that huge of a career, there's very few things in life that impress you when you've been able to meet and hang out with these players, and, you know, and play PlayStation with them at lunch, and play billiard and snooker, and play darts in the players' lounge. And just being around that energy at a young age changed, like, completely changed my mindset in a way, and made me ready for business, which was the second chapter in my life. And that's basically my tennis story.
Wow. So I listened to a YouTube clip you did today, and on that YouTube clip, you talked a lot about, like, hanging out with people who are better than you, and they have different ideas how to become better. Is that something you could use in business as well as you did as a tennis player?
Yes. And I think for me, it was very different. And I had a very big advantage, I will say, just because my tennis story opens doors. And for my whole life, it's really open doors. That's something that, you know, I'll answer your question directly, and then I'll tell you the advantage that not everyone has, because everyone has a different path in life. So because I was so fortunate with tennis, and having, you know, practiced and played and been coached by all these, now that when you look back, like, literally the best players in history, my tennis story opens doors because at a very young age, you know, when I retired from tennis at age 21, and I had no business experience whatsoever, zero business experience, the fact that I had my tennis past and that I had trained and competed, and because I could, you know, I could prove that I had played, it opened doors with very high level executives, investors, because everyone likes sports. And, you know, it's allowed me, you talked about, you know, I know you're big into hooks and storytelling and yeah, speaking. For me, it's a story that when I had nothing in business, I had my tennis story. And so, you know, it allowed me to meet huge investors who, you know, who's huge fund managers, you know, money managers who handle hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars, and be on the same level as them because I played tennis and I went playing tennis with them. And, you know, because I knew something better than them, which was playing tennis, it put me on a different level than if I was asking them for advice, because I would play with them and I would coach them a bit. And so my tennis past gave me a very unfair advantage because everyone loves tennis. Many people love tennis. I was lucky to play with some of the best, and it opens doors. It's very different to, you know, someone who wakes up at 20 years old and wants to change their life and hasn't had something before. I was fortunate to have something before. So the conversation, I will say, changed very differently. So it opened doors that honestly, I would have probably never been able to. So it's opened relationships I would have never gotten without my tennis past. And then coming back to your question about, you know, meeting people and jumping from tennis to business, it's something that I think, looking back, a lot of people can align themselves with mentors just by being, and we talk about this a lot with Andreas, just by being kind and admitting that they're willing to learn and follow, and without being too pushy because everyone's busy. But I'm always surprised by how few people actually seek out help and seek out advice and are willing to travel an hour or two or drive an hour or two to meet someone who can potentially change their life. I think the younger generation, and this is going to make us all sound very old, but I think that's something that I was willing to do at a very young age, travel and literally fly from one country to another to meet people, because I knew that something might happen at some point. And, you know, if you meet 5, 10, 20, 50 different people, maybe the first 12 people will not turn out to be very instrumental in your life and your journey, but maybe the 13th one will. And I think, I really believe that connections give you the biggest quantum leaps in success, and going and meeting people at a much higher level than you can change the trajectory of everything you do.
Cool answer, Matthias. And I mean, all three of us has background in sports. And what I've noticed is that people who has background in sports, they train. I mean, they train in sales, in marketing, in copywriting. Yep. They train exactly the same as they did in the sport. But people who haven't experienced sports and how to become really good in a sport, they don't train. They just go out there and they go to the match, which might be a sales conversation or a presentation. But I mean, when I won the Swedish Championship of Public Speaking, I trained for 2 years exactly the same as I did when I played floorball. I trained, I had mentors. It's very similar, sports and business, if you want to be truly great. Or how do you feel there, Andreas?
I completely agree. And I think that's why me and Matthias too, we're going to come to that later, but we are launching our own podcast about like talking about business and sports. And I think what Matthias is saying too is, and you too, Jonathan, is being really good at something takes a lot of work, of course. Like for him being number one in tennis takes a lot of work. But I'm thinking too, like when you're really good at something, like one thing, like take tennis, you can't be just number one in tennis if you just play tennis. You have to train, you have to go to the gym, you have to sleep, you need to eat, you need to recover, you need to do so many different stuff to become great at your sport. And I think a lot of people missing this in business that they're really good at one thing and they just do one thing instead of maybe develop the weaknesses that they have. Maybe they are great, like you, Jonathan, you're a great speaker. But look at what you did during 2 years. You took acting classes. You did a lot of different stuff. And maybe you trained smarter. Maybe you did more recovery. Maybe you ate better. I don't know. But there's a lot of stuff we can do around that thing that you want to be great at. Because I think that's a good thing for us from coming from sports. We realize, okay, I want to be a good hockey player. I need to do off-season training. I need to stretch. I need to warm up. I need to eat. I need to sleep. I need to recover. So we have all these things. That's not our sport, but it's crucial to be better at our sport. And I think that's a lot of missing things in business. What I see now hanging out on like the world level in business too is they're really, really good at one thing. But if you want to be attractive to a lot of people and be like really good, step up the highest levels, you need to be better at your weaknesses too. Like step up, let's say you're one good at one thing and but your communication might be not the best. But you're drinking too much because you are out to dinners four times a week with blah, blah, blah. Maybe that's not the best thing. Maybe you can be sober 2 out of 4. I don't know. You can sleep better. You can take care of yourself better. You can have better habits. It's a lot of things you can do to work on your weaknesses, because when you're really good at one thing, to be better at that one thing, just practicing that is really, really hard. You can be slightly better, but when you work on the weakness, if you can have like 4 or 5 things that you're really good at, but you have one prime thing that you're super good at, that's going to attract you a lot more in any business, I think. And I think we that comes from sport may have a little advantage of that because we are so used to it.
Yeah, that's definitely something that I related to with the floorball as well. And I play paddle now too, Matthias. It's not tennis, but it's paddle. Do you play paddle or?
It's fun. It's fun. It's not the same, but of course, you know, anything with rackets, you know, it's close, right? Yeah. But paddle is a lot of fun.
It is. But I played this game, and during the game, I noticed that, oh no, he's hitting for my backhand and it's quite high up. And that was my biggest weakness. And he saw that directly. So that's where that was the only spot he tried to hit the ball towards.
Yeah.
And I lost the game. So I spent like 2-3 weeks only working on that specific weakness that I had. And the next game, I could beat him. And that's exactly what you are talking about, Andreas, to be aware of your weaknesses so we can strengthen them. But Tony Robbins, when I was at his course in Miami, he said, work on your strength and not your weaknesses. How do you feel about that, Matthias? Because you were talking a little bit about that in a podcast interview I listened to today, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, I think... So from experience, you need both. So as the world becomes more and more sophisticated, that skill sets tend to be, especially if you look at the workforce today, we're seeing everyone's talking about artificial intelligence. There is a very real, this is not theory. This is a very real practical application today that, a lot of jobs that a lot of people working in companies, team members, staff who only have, we would equate them to hockey or tennis as one-dimensional players, right? So people who only do one thing. A lot of those jobs in the workforce today are getting replaced quickly by artificial intelligence. And this is not a prediction. We've seen it. We've reduced staff heavily over the last 12 months just thanks to ChatGPT, like many entrepreneurs and companies. So, that relates directly to the situation that, yes, we need to work on both. The strengths need to be stronger, but we're in a situation today where we're being weak at everything else is not good anymore. And this we can see in tennis, for example. If you look at the top 10 players from when I was watching, tennis as a child in the early 90s, usually top 10 players had one big weapon, maybe two. Those who had two weapons usually were literally in the top 5 in the world, right? A big serve or a big forehand. But a lot of the top 20 players had one main weapon, and the rest was honestly very weak relative to the main weapon. In today's game, it is impossible to be a professional tennis player without having a good level for every stroke, right? You need to have a good backhand, a good forehand, a good slice, good conditioning, good speed, good intelligence, IQ, and you need to have one major weapon. So the skill set, everything, think of like everything has improved, and the strength has improved too. And I think as we move towards, because we're talking about sports and business here, right, too. As we move towards, and we see this in different sports, it's very difficult, Andreas, we talk about this about hockey players, right? I mean, you know, a lot of the good guys in the juniors who are drafted, if they're one dimensional, they have a hard time getting regular slots in the pros, you know, so they go back to Europe to play. They need to be able to play, you know, offense and defense. Whereas 15, 20 years ago, the game was different. Tennis was the same. One big weapon put you in the top 20. Now it's impossible. And in business, it's the same thing. You know, coming back to, you mentioned marketing, copywriting, sales. It's very difficult today to be part of the 1% of your industry as an earner, but only be good at one thing, right? If you're only a good copywriter today and you don't know how to sell your services and you don't know how to brand yourself and you don't know how to, you know, do this kind of public speaking or interview and be able to portray yourself or be able to network, your days are limited. Your days are counted. The level has increased. And at the same time, those who actually work on plugging the holes in the bucket, like think of your weaknesses as holes in a bucket, those who plug the holes are much more successful today, because I believe also, and we talk about this with Andreas a lot, that the, you know, I really think that many people around across many industries are lazier than 10, 20, 30 years ago. So there is a big opportunity for those who work both on minimizing mistakes, minimizing weaknesses, and increasing their strengths.
I love that one. And I mean, how do you become aware of your weaknesses?
I mean, I think you need to look at your life. And I mean, I'm not sure, maybe weakness is the best word for this, but I mean, if you want to be top, like if I go to myself, I'm a coach today, and I'm pretty good and doing well, but I wouldn't be this good if I didn't like walk the talk too. I have my morning routines. I get up in the morning, like a funny story now, when I was in the States and Liam, my oldest son, called me, and I was at the gym, and I asked him, Liam, do you know what time it is? And he's like, yeah, 6:30 in the morning. But I know you're awake. You always awake this time. And you're always training in the morning. So he knew that I would be awake. He didn't hesitate to call me at 6:30 in the morning, because I'm always awake at that time, because that's my morning routine. And I don't think I would be this kind of a coach on the level I am at right now if I didn't study and read and develop myself every morning. I have my routines. I take care of myself. I recover. Like just last fall and in like September, I decided to take it really easy when I was in Sweden, and I just did my travels to the VIPs across the Atlantic. But I took it really easy to recover my body and my mind for getting ready for 2024 with Matthias and others, because I felt I was tired. So I listened to my body. I didn't just keep going, like go through it, just push, push, push. No, I listened to my body, like, okay, now you need to recover, because it's been a lot. So I ramped up the recovery part and took it really easy when I was home, listening to my body. And that for me was not maybe a weakness before this, but it was, I obviously had needed to work harder on it and listen to my body to be better at my A game, which is me and a coach. So I think, look at your life to answer your questions, and look at what you do. Are you just focusing on one thing? Are you taking care of yourself? Are you focusing on recovery? Are you eating healthy? Because if you do all these things, like taking care of, like training, nutrition, recovery, sleep, if you do these four things too, you're going to be better at your A game, that your thing you want to be good at. That's no question about that. And it's a funny thing that you said, Matthias, too, that with tennis, if I just look at my oldest son, Liam, and he signed NHL contract last year, which is absolutely amazing, of course. But he played the World Juniors, the biggest tournament for juniors now in Gothenburg over the New Year's. And he was the team captain, which was unbelievable. But the ask, his name is Håkan Lubb. He's a one of the biggest players ever played for in the NHL from Sweden. And they asked him, who has the biggest chance to have a long career in NHL of all the Swedish players? And he had to name one, and he said Liam. And they asked, why Liam? Because they have like really good players in that team. But he said, because Liam has everything. He can play first line with superstars. He can play first power play. He can be a goal scorer. He can also be a fourth liner that just doing the grit and just playing against their top line and just destroying their play. He can be a penalty kill. He can do everything. And he is a natural leader. So you can use him in pretty much any position, which make him really attractive to NHL. Instead of just having like, I can do one-timers in power play. You're a goal scorer, you were scoring a lot of goals, but there are a lot of players who have one skill. So if you have like Liam, many skills, you're probably going to end up with a pretty good career.
That's amazing. And I guess, Matthias, if you want to find out your weakness, you hire a coach that's on another level than you are.
Yep.
Because in Sweden, most coaches and speakers, they say, Jonathan, you're such a genius, you don't have any weaknesses. But I feel like that's not true. Because, I mean, if I compare my numbers with the best in the States, or like you, Matthias, it's very low. So if I ask like you, Matthias, or Tony Robbins, they could probably spot my weaknesses directly. Only by listening to your episode today, I understood one weakness I have is to build a team and to actually start working more with the team, because I'm way too much in the business now. I'm doing the sales, I'm posting, I'm there. So that's a huge weakness for me. And I learned that myself by listening to you. So I guess hiring a coach is a great way to find out your weakness as well.
Yes, and not only a coach, but someone that you... I think that you make a really good point. And I think the most important thing is also hiring someone that you align with at your time right now, based on your situation. And the example is, if you are a beginner in a skill set, right? There is no point in hiring the number one world-class copywriter, because the gap is too big. He's gonna press on things that you don't even understand. So, you know, there is a coach. So coaches can bring you to from level to level. And that's why you see with a lot of professional athletes, you know, the childhood coach who coaches you from, and we see this in tennis often, it's very rare that the coach who trains you from age 10 to 18 is the same one that you were training with at age 30, just because your needs are different, your personal situation is different, your game evolves. And there's also a situation where you know, the coach, unfortunately, also can only go as much as he knows. And a lot of coaches at some point, and the best coaches also have a conversation with their athletes and say, I cannot bring you more than where I have brought you here. Mm. And it's been a great journey. But for the sake of the friendship we have, I think having someone, a different eye coming in, a different viewpoint coming into the team would be more beneficial for you to go from, you know, number 20 in the world to number 5. We've been doing this for a while. We need a fresh pair of eyes. So like hiring a coach is key, but hiring the right coach in your present situation is even more important, because again, if you're just trying to if you're learning how to ride a bike, there is no point in hiring a Tour de France winner. You first need to pick up those basic skills. And then you can, you know, once you have the basics, you can go up and you can have multiple coaches through your career, of course, you know.
So if a speaker or a coach wants to become world class, what's the biggest mistake they do, Matthias?
A speaker or a coach world class on the, so on the speaking, in the speaking arena, like the speaking world? Or?
Yeah, exactly. Because most of my listeners are speakers or coaches, and they have very big dreams. They want to have TED Talks, and they want to be a guest lecturer at Tony Robbins events. And So what's the biggest mistake they are doing?
There's several. Number one is not speaking enough. Speaking, I've spoken, and I'm not a speaker, like, so I'm not a speaker. Of course, I'm a speaker because I've given hundreds of my own seminars and webinars, but I don't even think of myself as a speaker, you know? That being said, I have probably outworked the majority, 99% of professional speakers, because the way I operate. So I'll give you kind of like my to-do list when I want to pick up a new skill. Usually what, and this is something I did at the very beginning of my business career. So I usually go on Amazon because at the time there was no YouTube, there were no courses online. I learned marketing and copywriting and advertising from physical books in the early 2000s when I was a teenager. So I usually order the top 50 books of any given category. So I did this for copywriting, for example. I went on Amazon.com. At the time, they didn't even ship to Switzerland, so I had to find other bookstores, and I literally look for the top 50 books about a certain topic. And what I find is usually the top 50 books of any topic will give you, it will cover generally the broad spectrum of what you need to learn about an industry. So if it's speaking, I would order the top 50 books. And if you are a professional speaker and you haven't read the top 50 books on Amazon, you need to do that. That is a requirement. You must know, even if you don't agree with the technique, or even if the book is old, you need to know that, because I see it as, you need to become a historical expert of your craft. That's how I've always thought of it. So I've read the old books of marketing, P.T. Barnum books, David Ogilvy books, Claude Hopkins books, John Caples, all the legends of copywriting. I know them. I have read them. And so that's one thing. But theory is not enough, because then you need to practice. So the theory, what I coming back to my way of doing things when I was training for tennis, and the first fork in the road, which was you either lower your goals or do you increase your work. Your just your work ethic, right? So number one would be to read everything you can about the skill set that you want to master. Number two is to actually put yourself in a position to exercise and practice this, because especially with speaking, which is such a practical skill, you cannot become a professional speaker, at home on your computer. You must speak. You must speak in front of four people. You must speak in front of 40, 400, 4,000. You need to speak on webinars, Zoom calls, audio teleseminars. You need to speak in front of audiences in the sun, in the winter when it's cold. And I've done this. So I can give a speech in a parking lot and be able to hold a crowd for 2 hours, because I have that skill. But I've put in thousands, tens of thousands of hours in studying the craft and doing it on in all these different formats. So I think if we recap this, it's number one, learning about everything on a historical basis of the skill you want to master, which for me has always been about, the top 50 books on Amazon. Everyone, so because there's no excuse, a lot of these seminars can be very expensive, 10, 20, 30, $50,000 in the speaking world, but everyone has $10 or $20 to buy a book. So there was no excuse for that. And then it's really about practicing, and that will give you the truth about where you stand as a speaker. And the third thing I will say, which is a bit more advanced, is when you've done that, you need to be able to speak in any situation. And that will come usually coming back to the conversation we had before this call is, I've done a lot of improv, so improvisation classes, courses, and it will give you a skill set that very few speakers have, first of all, because you need to be able to improvise. If you see a bad comment on the screen, if you see someone who boos you on stage, I've seen that. I've seen at my own seminars in front of 400 people at the end of a 3-day seminar, someone saying, "I'm disappointed. I didn't learn anything." How do you answer that in front of 400 people who paid you thousands of dollars? I've had to. So I know how to do it because, you know, I've put in the hours to master that. But you need to put yourself in situations that require you to flex your muscles in different ways. In the same way that Andres doesn't put his athletes through the same exercise every year, you know, 12 months a year, because they need to be able to adapt to different circumstances. And it's the same thing with speaking or any skill.
Andreas, do you have anything? Because I know you have a lot of knowledge here as well. Do you have anything you want to add here, Andreas?
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to mindset too. It's but just listen to Matthias, you realize his mindset comes a lot from tennis, and I think that letter at 12 years old changed a lot with his mindset. And just to be able to change that, like the internal narrative that you have, like, I'm not a good actor. I can't act. You keep telling that to yourself, and the brain will believe it, and you will be a terrible actor, quote unquote, on stage as a speaker, which will not be good. But I think another important thing is, as Matthias saying, like, yeah, you can tell yourself that you're gonna do stuff, and you do. You're buying these books, so you're reading it, and you do the theory, and you maybe start speaking a little bit, but then you're not doing what you're telling yourself to do. You're kind of disappointing yourself because you're not walking the walk, so to speak. I think that's very, a lot of people recognize this because taking the final step to the highest level is tough. That's why not everyone is world class, because it is tough. You need to do the grind. You need to, like Matthias said, you need to be able to handle mistakes. How do you handle that when someone in front of 400 people tells you that you suck, you're terrible, that was really bad, and I paid $1,000 for this? How do you handle that? And it doesn't matter if 399 people said it was great. You will remember this one guy. And what do you do after that? Do you go home and cry and feel sorry for yourself?
And I still remember that. We
Yeah,
all remember it. No,
we
but
all
it's
do.
true.
Yeah. But the brain function, that's his brain is, that's why we're survivors, and we're, like the main reason for our brain is to survive. So I think it's a good thing. But I mean, just to change that, telling yourself I'm gonna do this and actually do it. And if you feel like you listen to Matthias, oh, I'm gonna buy 50 books, and then you're sitting in front of 50 books, like, the fuck, this is a lot, and you don't read them. They're like, when people tell me to buy, which supplement should I take? And I'm like, yeah, make sure you take them too. Not to have them on the table will not fix anything. You need to actually take them. So same with the books, that you need to actually read them. And if buying 50 is too much for you right now, start with one. Start with reading one page every day. It's one page a day, and you actually do it. It's a lot better than try to read one book a week. You see where you, as Matthias said, where are you right now? And start there. Take it step by step, but never stop going, moving forward step by step. So reading one page a day is a lot better than doing nothing, or doing like try to read one book first week and then you quit. And I think that's like the change the internal narrative to being the world-class person. Like, and you need to live it every day, every morning. That's like what I see in the mindset of becoming the world class.
So to summarize, like the biggest mistake a speaker can do is that they don't have enough knowledge and they don't practice as much as they should. And they don't, what was the third one, Matthias? You said three.
Yes.
So
I
knowledge,
said doing it in different
practice.
contexts and
Yeah.
improvisation. So being able
Yeah.
to,
To be
yeah.
able to do it in different contexts. That's amazing tips. So I invented the million wheel, and that's what I use when I coach, and when I looked at like Bob Proctor, Tony Robbins, I like to analyze them through my wheel. So I would love to hear your reflections about the wheel, Matthias. So it's basically a synergy with the product, the mindset, the marketing, and the sales. So if we have Andreas as an example, Andreas has one main product right now. Correct, Andreas? You have
Yeah.
your, how many weeks is your course?
8-week course.
It's an 8-week course, and it's a journey about health and training. What's the name of that product?
You'll become a certified fascia trainer.
All right. So Andreas has one clear product, and Andreas spent decades to create this product. Tony Robbins has like UPW as his main product. I have the Million Course as my main product. What I've seen is that speakers and coaches who truly succeed, they have some sort of main product, a product they spend years and years and years improving. So it's so great that if people buy that product, they're gonna buy different products as well. So a mistake there I see is that if a coach in personal development, that coach might have 20 different small products instead of like one or two truly great products. And I know, Matthias, that you are excellent in creating products and to like package them. What's your reflections on the product aspects for a speaker and a coach?
I think that, first of all, I laughed when you said 20 products, because I've heard the stories too. I've seen so many of these entrepreneurs, or, you know, let's call them knowledge entrepreneurs, you know, who publish information and expertise, and they have, you know, usually with people, because I've also, because I've been doing it, for 20 years, I've met tens of thousands of these, let's call them information publishers too. They have the more ideas they have about different products, the less clarity they have on what they actually do. And that's really a constant, because if we sit here, we can brainstorm literally 50 ideas for Andreas's, we can turn Andreas into 50 different information products. We can turn you into 50 different information products. We can talk about doing stand-up, doing improvisation, doing speaking, voice work, posture when speaking. So we can, but doesn't mean that we should. And usually the answer is no, we should not have such a large diversity for several reasons. One, from a very practical side, it's impossible to market 20 different products at once. It's just impossible. You know, I have over 200 people working across my companies. I know how to hire people. We've hired over 5,000 people for my businesses. There is no way you alone at home as a speaker will be marketing 20 products yourself. It is impossible. It will also confuse the audience, because who are you if you have 20 different products? Are you product A? Are you product B? Product C? And I know the thought process people think. It's saying, yeah, but if they buy product A and they like it, they'll buy the other 18. And I will tell you, and I know, Jonathan, you're smiling because I know you'll agree, saying it doesn't work that way. You need to pick one to three things that you want to truly communicate to the world. And speaking from a very practical perspective, that you do not have the capability to market 20 things at the same time. And I always talk about the example that Steve Jobs did when he came back to save Apple. His first action, and you can read this about Steve Jobs' story, his first action was literally cutting dozens of products from the Apple catalog, because you cannot market dozens or hundreds of different things. You need to focus your efforts on marketing fewer things. And if you look at the Apple lineup of product, when he came back, it was very simple. It was easy to understand what computer could deliver what speed. And then they came out with the iPod, which was a single product. So you must choose between one, at most three different products. And three would be if you already have a large audience. I've gotten businesses from zero to 10 million. So eight figures with two products. And it's an option A and an option B. Usually 80% of the same product, but just the B has either a longer duration or more of a one-on-one component. That's all you need.
Yeah.
And also, I will say one last thing about the on the marketing side. People need, especially now, people are so distracted, not because they want to, but because they are, just because with the amount of social media apps and the time attention and the notifications on phones, it's so difficult to get your marketing across. When I was starting out 20 years ago, it was very simple. the open rates on emails were 95%. When you sent an email to a list of 5,000 people, 4,500 read it, and you would get 1 to 200 email responses because they thought that it was a personal email, right? That's how it was.
Yeah.
And today you need to, for lack of a better word, hammer your message dozens of times, hundreds of times for people to understand. And I told this to Andreas recently, it's just like, we will be saying the same thing about Fascia and Mastery, Fascia Mastery, for months. And 8 months from now, someone will say, I didn't know you did Fascia Mastery. Because, you know,
exactly.
That's just how it is. You need to spend more time marketing fewer things.
Yeah. And that's my big realization here. Like, rather fewer products, and to have the product in line with the mindset. So there needs to be a synergy between the product and the mindset. So for me, for example, I coach a lot of speakers and coaches. I mean, I'm so engaged in this subject. So I sit there a Sunday evening and I study and I love it and I talk about it all day long. And that's a checkpoint of like my mindset is directly linked to my product. I love my product myself, because many people, they create a product and think, well, I would be rich with this product, but they don't really like that product. And especially for speakers and coaches, that's a big problem. And that's what I like about you, Andreas. You're totally absorbed in your mindset. You're going to the stage, you hang out with surgeries, and you're learning your subject all the time. So there's a direct link between Andreas' mindset and his product. And if we move up to the marketing, I think the biggest mistake here is that, okay, a coach and speaker, they decide a product, but they market something else, something completely else. And I did that mistake too. When I was an adventurer, I had a product as a motivational speaker, but I market like trips to Kilimanjaro. So everyone I met say, what are you doing, Jonathan? Like, what do you actually work with? And that's, if people start to ask you that question too much, that's a problem. So the marketing needs to be in line with the product, and the mindset needs to be in line with the product. Do you agree, Matthias, or do you not agree?
I definitely agree for the audience, especially because, you know, most people listening are between one and five employees, five team members. At that level, you must focus. And it's not just about focusing, you know, on creating a good webinar or a good podcast, or focusing on creating a good sales letter, but it is, you must focus your message on something. You must be known for something. And until you are not known for something, you don't exist in the marketplace. That is the truth. And from experience, getting known for something will take a minimum of 6 months, a minimum of 6 months, usually 12 to 36 months for the broader niche market, because most of these coaches, consultants are in, you know, markets that are, you know, usually more niche, right? They're an expert of XYZ field. And for you, you have to remember that you're also competing directly against other people. And so we are in a world where it's also, and this is my very competitive side coming from tennis, we are in a world where the person who can communicate the best, who can communicate the longest, and who can get people to say, oh, that's the guy who does this, or that's the girl who does that, that's the person who wins most of the deals, more visibility. And so if you're always hopping from one thing to the other, you're never known for anything. And so you must decide and choose and pick your battles.
And sometimes to also kill your darlings, because many clients I have, they are in love with three different products, and it's three different markets, and they market those three, and it's confusing. So how do you decide your product, Matthias? What do you, how should they think when they take this big decision?
I will say that my decision, my thinking, my decision making process, and we talked about this recently, actually in DC with Andreas. My thinking about this question has really evolved because I have evolved, right? So the answer I'm going to give you now is very different to Matthias, who was trying to learn and teaching himself coding with PHP and HTML books at home in my parents' bedroom 20 years ago. So the answer when you start a new business is really about survival. It's really about getting the first few clients. It's about surviving and being able to pay your bills with the passion that you have as a coach or a consultant. That's the number one thing. My position now is the extreme opposite, you know. So I'll give you both answers. So it helps everyone. If you are at the beginning of your journey and you generate less than $100,000 a year with your product, your productized expertise, there is no point in having more than three products. Three is a maximum. I would always recommend between one and maximum two if you're under $100,000. And I gave you the formula a few minutes ago, which was a version A and a version B. It's 80% the same thing. The B can simply have, instead of offering 3 months of coaching, you offer 6 months or 12 months of coaching. That's it. And until you have generated and collected $100,000, there is no point in creating 5, 10, 15 different products. So that's for that situation. Coming back to your question about how to decide between these products, it depends really on where the person is right now. There is something there with these three products, right? That you said, which one do I choose? There is always going to be one that sells more. Always.
Yeah.
It's never a case of 33%, 33%, 33%. It's always a case of 60%, 30%, 10%. So if you think as a strategic thinker, which is really what I do now, is why would you allocate thinking and bandwidth and marketing and time and focus to 10%? It makes no sense. I would much rather put my focus on looking at the best-selling products, especially if I'm at the beginning of my entrepreneurial journey as a coach or a consultant, because the truth is I need to see success, right? I need to see some sort, I need to pay my bills. And you are in a survival situation, which is great. I've been there, you know? And you have to decide, okay, initially I need to build my comfort. I call them, you know, you can call them pillows, cushions, financial cushions. So you need to build up your base so you can breathe a bit. Because if you're finishing every month stressed, there's a problem.
You can't be creative.
You can't be creative. It takes a toll. You can't think clearly. So number one is taking care and making sure that financially you're okay. Now, on the flip side is once you have, because you probably have listeners who do well financially, they have their ongoing streams of income, then really the situation is, for me at least, the way I think of now is the investment today, right? First quarter 2024, is it worth doing for the next at least 5 to 10 years? But that's my position, which is very different to when I was starting out. That's why I'm giving these two answers, because as you evolve in revenue and finances and teams, your thinking will evolve and must evolve, and that, you know, that will change. So your criteria should evolve based on your situation. And if you have a comfortable situation where you have an ongoing stream of clients and you don't need, and you're not in need today, I would highly advise you to only pick projects that can be around for at least 2 years. You don't need to go 10 years like I do, but at least 2 years where you know that, okay, for the next 2 years, I feel comfortable and I enjoy talking about this topic and pitching this product or this topic. That's the double answer.
That's a great answer. And the fourth layer in the million wheel. So we have the product, the mindset needs to be in line with the product. The marketing needs to be in line with this few product. And we need to be able to answer the question, how do we sell this product? And you sell them based on your strength in sales. So I sell them mostly through calls and webinars and info meetings. So the million course, I love speakers and coaches. I have the podcast, which is directly in line with my product, and I know how to sell it. And if I have a synergy, my wheel can spin. So this is kind of my my thoughts and the way I coach Matthias. Do you have any feedback on it?
No, I mean, I think it's a great way of, it's a very systematic way to think about it. So I really like it. I would add, like, after this, after the four, I think the fifth would be team building and removing yourself more from everything. And that is the,
definitely.
That is when, and you know, I've gone through that several times, and that's when you actually get businesses that are assets, and when you can slowly start removing yourself from everything and have someone else who can come in and run those operations, which is essentially what I have for, you know, my portfolio business, is people who run those operations. But make no mistake, like, this, it doesn't happen overnight. You know, it takes time to build the structure that you just described, those four. But the fifth step would be really about, okay, how can I get someone who is competent and who can come in and offload time from me based on my business model? Because you said something very interesting. You said, I do calls, I do, you know, info meetings, I do, you know, speeches. Depending on the business model of anyone listening here, it will depend, right? Some people are very good at sales and phone sales, but it takes a lot of time. So then what you need to decide is, do you want to do that? Or is it okay to, you know, get someone else to do it and accept that they will not close as much as you will, but you will get 5, 6, 8 hours a day back for yourself? That's a trade-off that you need to decide. So step five would be really about thinking of ways, running an inventory and audit really of your business. Like, if you hire someone from the outside and say, okay, from the 40, 50, 60 hours I work a week, or 20 if it's 20 hours, what do I need to start removing myself from, and where can I get other people to come in and help me with, so I can have more time to do something else, or just to live your life and just have more free time?
That is definitely my next step. I've been sick for a couple of weeks here, and when I was sick, I understood how vulnerable my business is, because I'm doing the courses, I'm doing the lectures, I was supposed to do the sales. So this is definitely my next step to get more knowledge in. In another interview you did that I listened to today, you spoke about how to find like really talented people and how to keep them. Because that has been a challenge for me, like how to find a sales guy who is just as good as I am. I mean, it's almost impossible to find those kind of people, because usually they have this huge payroll or these huge bonuses. So how should I and the listeners think there, Matthias?
So it is a mindset shift. So, you know, I mentioned it a few moments ago, but let's really go deeper in it. It's accepting that they will never be as good as you, most likely, because especially in a business that is based around a personal brand, the personal brand, you know, doing the call, doing the one-on-one, generally, especially if the audience knows you, the conversion rates are insanely high, close to 100%. Usually, it's either a timing issue, you know, for example, the person just, it doesn't make sense right now because they're going on vacation and they might want to join in a month, or it's literally a situation of like being strapped for money. It's a financial situation. The relationship, usually, especially for people in the expert field, right? People who have YouTube channels and podcasts and email lists, the resistance is not on the actual product, because the leads are so warm. So you Jonathan, or you the listener who has, you know, who wants to remove if you want to remove yourself slowly from the business, and we're talking sales here, first of all, it's accepting that no one will have the same closing ratio as you ever. It just, you know, it's in the same way that you would not buy, there is magic into talking to the main person and the main celebrity, right? You will just feel a different way. if you talk to your favorite actor or actress that you grew up watching, you'll just feel a different way than if you talk to the assistant. That's just the reality.
Yeah.
So there is a very real, and you can be pitching the same product, the same price, the same everything. The feeling is just different. So the hardcore numbers will be very different, but it's an acceptance that is the price that you pay to have more time to do another wheel. For example, you do the speaking one, and then you can have another one about branding and building a personal brand. So it's accepting that, you know what, I can do it myself and I can close 90%. But if I get someone in, and we'll get into like the mechanics of how to get someone in to help with all this. If I get someone in, they might only do 50 to 60%, which I will accept because it will give me X amount of other benefits that I don't have today. It will give me 3 hours in the morning. It will give me 3 hours more in the evening. It will give me the ability to have not just one wheel, but three. You know, I can build two businesses this year and have the current one that is running maybe not at 100% of the revenue, but maybe 80% of the revenue. So it's a trade-off that you make and it's a decision that not everyone wants to make, meaning some experts just are very comfortable doing everything themselves and they enjoy it. And it's very difficult for them to, you know, give up control. And others are very comfortable and very used to giving up control, and they've done it before and they understand that, you know, the results will not be the same as when I do it, but at least I have these other benefits. So that's number one, is really like accepting.
Yeah. That's a really good one. I guess when I played floorball, I was a striker. I scored goals. That was my job. And if I didn't score goals in like 2 days, 3 days, I felt bad. I felt sick. And it's a little same feeling. Like in February, I tried to delegate sales and didn't do so many calls. And I felt that feeling like I did when I didn't strike. So for this month, I said, no, I'm taking them back. So every day now I start at 9 with a sale call. Yes, to get me in flow and to score. And I guess if I want to scale, that's probably the wrong way to do it. But it gives me a lot of energy to sell myself. Do you have any advice for me there?
Yeah, I will say you can also do it gradually. So it's not an all or nothing situation. You know, you could really say, okay, if you usually do 20 calls a week, you can decide that for the next month or two, you only do 8 calls a week. So you still have that adrenaline. You still know that you're going to close 5 out of 8. You still have cash flow. There's low risk on your end. And you get a mini Jonathan with you. So it's not really a zero, you know, all or nothing. Gradual usually will show you, and it's, you know, it's the same thing as I don't drink much alcohol, but I've read enough to know that it's very difficult to stop an addiction overnight. Usually it's a case of trying to scale out of that. And business is the same with hiring. It's very difficult to add 10 new people to a team. It's much easier to say, okay, we're going to add 10 people in the next 3 months. It's the same way that you want to do this with sales is, okay, my goal by the end of this quarter is to only do maybe 10 calls a month. Okay. Let's work week by week and reduce 10 to 20%. Every week I'm going to reduce a few calls, which gives time to someone else to come in and assist me. And by the time, you know, 3-4 months are passed, their performance has increased and you have removed yourself slowly and you still get the best of both worlds. So you can really do it gradually.
Yeah, but that's an thank you so much for that coaching, Matthias. I'm thinking you Andreas, I tried to recruit Max Steen for a year because I felt that's a guy who know how to sell. So I really, really wanted Max to be my sales guy, but I understood quite quickly that all right, he's too good. He's gonna do his own stuff, but now he's working with you a little bit, Andreas. How is that to have like a high class seller in your team?
I mean, I like to be world class, and I like to work with world class. And I've seen myself struggle and going through, you know, a long, long career of as a trainer, like 20 plus years now, and ups and downs, of course, and learn a lot. And today I see myself as my dad has been telling me for years, like, when are you going to realize that you're top world at what you do? I'm like, probably never. And which make me, I'm always going to be this, I never going to be, feel like I'm the best, because I will constantly learn, continue to learn, because I never feel that I'm done. I know everything, because I will keep learning, because I think I don't know everything, which I don't, but I know I'm up there, I'm top world in what I do. And now when I have this team with Lovisa, and now especially when me and Matthias just, okay, let's do this now. We start now with an 8-week course for trainers and therapists and health professionals, and learn about the way we train people is different. The way we rehab people is different. And it's the future of training and rehab. And finally, now when the science is caught up and says what I've been doing for years and years and believed in so much is finally verified by science. So now it's perfect timing to hit, like, okay, let's go now. And I feel ready, mentally ready, and I feel that I am world-class, and I know I can deliver. And that's why, if I didn't feel like that, because I was thinking about this when you were speaking before, Matthias, too, like, if you're in the beginning, don't work with, like, the best copy guys in the world. If I was in the beginning, I would not be able to work with Matthias, because I would, like, no, I can't do this, because he's way beyond too good for me. Today, I feel like I am on the same level as him, but on my profession. Because I'm as good as him when it comes to my stuff. And I want to work with people that are as good as me or better and smarter than me, because he's a lot smarter than me. And I learn from him every day. And I want to work with people that are smarter than me and better than me, a lot better than me, and let's say sales or marketing, whatever. So I think that's a combo for me and Matthias is perfect now. Wouldn't have been 10 years ago, but now it's perfect. And you talk about Max, and Max is, yeah, probably the best closer and seller in Sweden right now. And when we talked and you introduced us and we clicked at a personal level first, because for me and Matthias, same, I know that, and you, Jonathan, too, personality, chemistry, friendship, trust is key number one. And I felt that straight away with Max. We were talking the same language and we hit it off. And he really loved our product. That Matthias and I have developed now, and yeah, it's been amazing so far. And we've started to sell these 8 weeks this week, and they are, Max and his partner Victor are crushing it. It's amazing. And you can get me, or you can both me and Matthias in this program too, because he's going to do some of the branding and stuff. So we have like two products in one that you were talking about. So we have the 8 weeks for to be a better trainer rehab guy. But we also have Matthias in to teach about branding if you want that. So we have two different products in one product, like the A and the B that Matthias was talking about. So we're walking the walk. We're doing what we're saying we're doing, so to speak. But yeah,
that it's must be amazing, Andreas, now to actually accept and to trust and to just go along. Because that is a scary step to take. As Matthias was talking about, you have your darlings and the hit rates and everything. Yeah. But one day we need to step out of that zone.
Absolutely. And I think I've never been scared of stepping out of comfort zone. I've never been scared of, because I've been living a life with a lot of self-hate before. And I hated myself so much when I was younger. So I'm not scared anymore what people think about me. Because, yeah, I have long hair, I have a hat on me, and people can think whatever they want about me. But I know I'm a really, really nice person, and I'm really good at what I do. And I can say that today, which it feels great. And I can say to my dad today that, yeah, I know I'm tough world at what I do. There's a reason why these VIP guys are flying me all over the world, because I'm pretty good, you know. And to feel confident like that today has taken so much work. And still does. I'm working with myself, on myself, with my mindset. I know you think I have the strongest mindset, Jonathan, but I'm working with it every day to get stronger and better. And that work on the mindset side will make me a better coach. And today I'm ready to work with guys like Matthias, who's top world at what he does. So, yeah, it's been, I mean, it took me 20 years to get here. So it was not over. This is not an overnight thing.
Yeah. But Matthias, I have one of my last questions is that if you were let's say you are 20 years old and you have zero cash and you have to start over with the goal of becoming the person you are today, what would you do if you only have 30 days to really take steps forward? What would be the concrete steps you would take with zero cash and just a dream to become world class?
I think that there's two different paths, which will lead to the same dream, same direction. And it depends on your personality. But most people, if I am most people, the number one thing I would do is proactively seek out and reach out and DM and email and call people who are where you want to be. And I'm shocked by the amount of the low amount of DMs and messages that some of the most successful people in their fields get. It's shocking that some of the most successful financiers who have handled billions of dollars in assets get one to two DMs a month from people who ask them, "Hey, I'm starting my finance career. I would love to have a Zoom call. Can I pay you for your time?" And these people are retired, right? It's shocking that so few people proactively reach out and ask for guidance, for mentoring. Because if you only have 30 days, there is a time constraint. So the time constraint is how can you leapfrog and how can you jump over and take the shortcut? The shortcut is working alongside or under people who have achieved what you want to achieve. So that's the number one thing. And
Can I interrupt here 1 second?
yeah, sure.
So 20 years ago plus, one of my first big courses I took was to be a mental coach, mental training. And this guy, Torsten Hansson, was leading the course, and he has one of the top golfers in the world. I think he worked with Henrik Stenson for, maybe he still does. Super good guy. So, and back then I was hanging out more on bars and nightclubs and stuff, and knew a lot of people on restaurants. So, been always pretty good at thinking outside the box. I asked Torsten after like day two, like, "Do you want to go out for dinner?" Because I knew he lived south in Sweden. And he said, "Yeah, why not?" So we went to dinner. So I had actually 3 nights in a row, one-on-one talks with him after class. And this is funny because this is over 20 years ago. He said to me exact those words you just said, Matthias. He said, "Andreas, what do you want to be?" And I'm like, "I want to be the best trainer in the world." He said, "Good. Reach out to the best people in the world right now and learn from them because they are top of the world. They will not see you as competition. They will probably help you. They'll probably be humble enough because they reach the top." So ask them, and I did. And I reached out to the best of the best in the world. And most of them were in the States and Australia. And I have a thing for the States. I love to be there. So I travel a lot there, and I hung out with the best of the best in the business. Some of them turned out not to be the best of people, but I learned so much. That's like the beginning of my whole career. I wouldn't be here today without that advice. So that's a
Well,
funny.
I think that's kind of summaries this episode because for me as well, when I was 19, I reached out to Johan Ernst Nilsson, and he did charity projects with Leonardo DiCaprio. He hang out with Tony Robbins, and he charged $100,000 for one lecture, and he did an expedition in the South Pole where the ice melted. So he had to be picked up with a helicopter, and the helicopter flew him maybe 100K downwards. But the media in Sweden, they picked this up and said, "Johan is cheating. He has been taking the helicopter, so he's a bad guy." So it was this hate storm towards him. So I thought, when he's receiving all this hate, maybe this is my opportunity to text him and say, "Hey, you're my hero. You're a true legend. I just don't know why people hate you because Basically, yes, you're my idol, and I would love to have you as my mentor. I have nothing to offer. I can't even pay you anything because I'm basically broke, but can you be my mentor? True love, Jonathan. And he said yes.
Incredible.
So it's like the same message from all of us. If we have nothing, what would we do? Matthias, it's been a great honor having you in my podcast. Andreas
it was a
as
pleasure.
Well, did you have fun, Matthias?
It was a lot of fun, especially talking about things that, you know, we, Andres and I talk very often, but these things, you know, when it's articulated about around a different topic, you know, new stories come out, and it's just a great moment. Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you, Matthias. Andreas, did you have a good time?
I always loved speaking to you. Like the common theme here with you two guys is, you're absolute incredible people, and I love you. But it's every time you both said the same thing to me. Every time we speak, it's like a podcast episode. And I guess this is says it all, right? The three of us together. I think I hope that the listeners will enjoy this. And now you see why I love Matthias, right, Jonathan?
Yeah, what a guy you are, Matthias. I would love to chat more with you in the future.
For sure. No, thank you. It was a great time.
I hope you enjoyed this episode, and please help us share this episode. And I will also like to again mention that Andreas and Matthias, they are starting up their own podcast show, The High Performance Secret. So if you liked and enjoyed Matthias and Andreas, check in their new podcast, who's launching very soon. Or has it already been launched, Matthias?
We've actually recorded the first few episodes, so it should be launching in the next week or so.
Okay, in the next week or so.
Yeah.
Have a great day, everybody. Thank you for today.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.